My name is Lori. I'm an addict. First, I want to thank God for allowing me to be here and to make it to this convention. And we've just been having a ball. And I want to thank the convention for believing in me and trusting in me to be able to carry a message, you know, of my experience, strength, and hope. You know, and I wanted to come up and look real pretty because I am pretty, you know. But sometimes I know that I have to get ugly. You know, because a lot of times it would be easy for me to come up here and fake in front. I tried to get out of it because I don't like sometimes when I have to expose things about me that I'm not proud of. You know what I'm saying? But my lesson has been so heavy. You ever just had to be learned a lesson that was so heavy that sometimes when you talk about it, you know, my spirit starts jumping. I want to run away. I don't feel like talking about it. I don't want people to look at me any different than the way that I look on the outside. But I know for a fact that if I was not happy, joyous, and free today, I would not be able to have the ability or the courage to share with you what God has done for me. So, you know, the ninth step, I don't like talking about. In fact, let's get real, I don't like apologizing. Because, leave it up to me, I don't really feel like I'd make any mistakes. And I know, you know, because I really wanted to look cute. And I tried to get out of not doing this. Because it's forcing me to expose some things that I really feel like I don't want to expose. But when God has you do something, it's not about what I want. It's about what God wants for me to expose to you guys. I'm going to tell you what, I'm on state probation, and I'm on federal probation right now. And I'm telling you, I got on probation clean. The hardest year for me was almost, maybe it's going on little 2 years, and I'm just coming out the storm. You know, and it has a lot to do with making the amends. See, when we keep talking about making amends, we think that it's just about saying I'm sorry. You know, and the worst amends that I don't like to make is, I don't like to make the money amends. You know what I'm saying? I really feel like if you didn't get yours, you missed out. You know what I'm saying? And still like to reap the benefits because I'm always trying to get something for nothing. So I'm going to just speed this up and I'm going to go real fast. Me and my husband I got married and I was on Section 8 when I got married, you know. And that was another thing I really didn't want to come up here and say. I felt ashamed. But, it, you know, looking at me with these nails and rings like, bitch, you was on Section 8. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I don't know my phone. I'm so sorry. It's probably the husband. But I was on Section 8, and my husband had moved with me. I got married while I was on Section 8. And I went to go put my husband on a lease. He couldn't get on a lease because, of course, I married another recovering addict, and chances are he has a background. You know what I'm saying? So I knew what that was. And, you know, and as much as I begged my husband to let's go buy a house, because, you know, when you go down there and fill out the Section 8 papers, you are so wrong. You know what I'm saying? And I put on there, no, he does not live with me. But when I went to go put him on there, in fact, he was not allowed to be on there because of his criminal background record. Little did I know I could have fought it, but I didn't fight it. I just went with the flow. So I decided I was going to get a house, you know, tell my husband, let's go get a house. But in the meanwhile, my husband didn't want to go get a house. He just wasn't ready, you know. So I'm still searching around. I went and got approved for some loans and so on and so forth to go buy a house. Needless to say, every house that I went to look at, my husband didn't want it. In the meanwhile, I'm still, you know, enjoying the benefits of paying nothing. You know what I'm saying? Because this is about my part. It's not about his part, but his part has a little bit to do with the decision that I made and the consequences that I had to pay, you know what I'm saying, as a direct result of not stepping out on God's will and being totally honest. See, honesty is something else. People just think it's nice to tell the truth. It's really nice to tell the truth, but it's hard to be honest. Let's get real. I'm talking about be honest consistently. I'm not talking about being truthful, because I can always tell on myself, but it's another thing to walk out honesty, you know what I'm saying, at all times. It's about integrity, but increasing the integrity to a certain level, because when you get forced into a position, when I'm going to say, yes, I will, no one, yes, I will, no one, I just don't feel like feeling like this. Make a long story short. We have a business. In the meanwhile, we are business on Section 8. I don't even know why, but I didn't want to expose this. But we have a business, and also I have a, when we just started this business at this time, and we've been 3 years in the business today. And business was going real good. In the meanwhile, we're on the Section 8. And in my town, my husband, we have a retail business where we sell clothing, sneakers, and so on and so forth. And, I mean, we was making money. And in our town, the area got raided for counterfeit clothing. And as my husband went down to town to get processed, the investigator, federal investigator, went down there too. He thought, my husband's a snitch. He makes me sick. You know what I'm saying? He can't hold water. It just, you know, I get down there, I don't have nothing to say to you people. Get my lawyer. You know, but it doesn't make sense. You know, made a long story short, the federal investigation, we got busted for this counterfeit. We lost a whole lot of money in it, and not only did he get arrested for that, but we got indicted for the Section 8. Now, in the meanwhile, let me tell you, this was my second or my third amends, because it was already on my amends list. You know, and you know, my sponsor's here to vouch for me. I had already put the housing situation on my men's list because I knew it deep in my gut. I don't know how not to be real. You know what I'm saying? But I understand that, you know, living in dishonesty and call myself, quote unquote, being submissive, you know, but in the back of my mind, I'm still reaping the rewards. See, it's an underline here. People don't even see reaping the rewards, because the real deal is that I could have got out the situation if I would have been totally honest with myself. It wasn't about my husband, because at that time, he was out of the will of God. You know, and as long as I went co-signed his stuff, I was also out of the will of God. So, you know, I got arrested. And in the meanwhile, while I got arrested, my son was going to court. He came up with, he had about 30-something felonies. And he was going to court, too. And the reason why I'm just telling this story is because sometimes making amends is making an amends to myself. You know, and while I was getting sentenced, so was my son. My son ended up getting 15 to 30 years. You know, and I got to tell you where my spirituality was at the time that I was going through this process in the midst of 1 year. There was a girl that shared over here, talked about how sometimes, you know, Miss Lori, who had 16, 17 years at that time, I got 18 years now, but I had about 17 years, getting ready, 17, 16, getting ready, probably going 17. And at that time, I was in our NA community. When you don't do and you don't act the way that people who think that you should act, and they put you somewhere where you don't belong, the humiliation and the embarrassment that I felt throughout this process was really hard for me, but I still came to meetings, I still did my step work, you know, and it's easy for people to sit there and look at you and judge you and say, well, how could she, you know what I'm saying, but it was really hard for me to keep my head up, and I kept my head up anyway. There were certain people people that I had expected to be there for me, but there was doors that was shut in my face. Little did I know it was not happening to me. It really was happening for me because God had already started to wear out the tear with the wheat. Does that make any sense? So in the midst of me still making this amends to the community and also to the federal government that I owe this money to, I had to walk with the humiliation, knowing that I was wrong, but at the same time knowing that I'm another recovering addict with good defects and indifferent defects. And sometimes I was sitting up here and I was wanting different people to be there for me because I couldn't take the whole NA community to be there for me, because sometimes everybody don't got your best interest at heart. Some people just want to be nosy and be in your business just so they can say, I told you so. See, there were some people who wanted me to get high because it seemed like they said, well, we got her now. You know what I'm saying? She talked all that good NA shit, and now you see that this program really don't work. But for me, I had a foundation already working some steps. I was still doing some things. I was still praying to the God of my understanding. And the people that I wanted there was not there for me. And I began to get bitter. I began to get angry. I had so many resentments that was embedded in me because the people that I wanted to stand strong with me was not there. So as I'm walking through this bitterness, anger, I realize one day, and I'm crying out to God, and I end up going to be a chairperson of our area in service work, and I know that service workers will help me. So I remember being at home one day, and I was just crying out to God. And I was saying, how could this happen to me? You know what I'm saying? How could she not be there for me like I wanted her to be? And it wasn't my sponsor. It's just that I didn't want everybody to be near me because I was just too vulnerable at that time. And I said, why wasn't she there for me? When I had to go get sentenced before the judge, nobody was there for me. And I sure as I'm sitting here saying to you, I heard God say, I was there for you. And you can let yourself off the hook.
Come on.
And the reason why I'm taking you through this is because you didn't trust me. You know what I'm saying? You didn't trust me. And I wanted you to be able to walk with some dignity and some integrity. You know, and it's still been like that still to this day. You know what I'm saying? My business is just going blooming. You know what I'm saying? I'm almost done with the course. I can go and do as I please. You know, I pay all my fines and stuff. And I'm telling you, I still work step. I still got involved in service work. I still sponsor people. My job is safe and secure. You know, and sometimes when you come in here, when I come in here and share, the greatest harm that I can cause is the things that I expose, because sometimes I start to worry about if anything can come and bite me back in my back. Because, you know, sometimes the things that leave up out of this meeting after you get done sharing will beat you to your crib. So the last thing I want to talk about is my relationship with the God of my understanding and how that amends came about. You know, my mother is gay. She's a dyke. She always been a dyke, you know. And my mom only had sex with one man ever in her life. And that was my dad, of course. <You know? laughs> But we never had a mother and daughter relationship. You know, and the reason why we never had a mother and daughter relationship, because the connection was never there, because she never wanted any kids. She got depressed, and she was in and out of prison all my life, in and out of the penitentiary. And, you know, and I had to be raised from getting molested to getting bit in the face by a rat, from malnutrition, staying in the hospital, from being, the crack addict baby. You know what I'm saying? Well, it was the heroin addict baby at that time. I never knew who my dad was, you know, growing up all of my life. And my mom is clean now. I took her to her first NA meeting. But this is the hit. The hit is that Even though I had opened up my home to her, you know, and she would calm down, because I don't raise my kids the way that my mother raised me. I always been there for my children. They got their back through it all. And I just see some things, some type of respect that I have for my children that I expect her to have for my kids. But the relationship between me and her just didn't seem real normal. You know, and my husband would tell me, honey, something ain't right about you two. You know what I'm saying? Because she would come down. She lives in New York City. And she would say, I'm coming down. And I said, cool, that's fine. Now, mind you, my mom is not the feminine type like I am. She's the kind of woman that wears a baseball cap. She looks like a dude. She's the butch. You know what I'm saying? And she listens to rap music. She watches girls' butts and stuff like that. You know, which is fine with me. I have no problem with that. You know what I'm saying? So, but our relationship was not like mother and daughter. My husband is total opposite of me. We call each other salt and pepper. He's been raised by his parents for over 30-something years. He never knew his dad from his mom. You know, they always been in the same household. But he knew something was wrong with that connection. He said, honey, something ain't right between you and your mom. I need to sit down and talk to you too. I said, well, what are you talking about? We have a wonderful relationship. Why is you up here stirring shit up? I said, you are not a damn therapist. I'm not going to sit up here. You don't know how to open me up and close me. I don't, you know, we just don't have, what are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. He said, I don't care. My husband very rarely do this. He said, I don't care what you say. We're going to sit down and have a talk. I said, well, damn, you know. So we all went to the meeting, came home from the meeting. And mind you, we all getting ready to sit down, and me and my husband argued for a while about this meeting that we was going to have, because he didn't think that it was a normal mother and daughter relationship. I just, my attitude, excuse my expression, I was thinking, where the fuck do he think he is? You know what I'm saying? Where did he get this bullshit from? You know, but I went along with it because he demanded at that time, and plus he's the man, you know. So, of course, my friend told me pride means primary reason I die early. Which is fine, you know, and he would get on me about it. So I said, okay, we're going to have this meeting. We went to an NA meeting, came back, and so we sat in a circle. And before we all have a meeting, he wants to pray, so he prays. And he says, you know, he said, God, let this meeting go, you know, as good as planned and anything. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what the hell are we having a fucking meeting for? You know, so we, us three just sitting there. He said, well, honey, do you have anything you want to say? I said, hell no, I don't have shit to say. I told you, I don't even know why you wanted to have this meeting. Mind you, this had everything to do with my ninth step, because I had put my mom on my men's lips, and I didn't feel like I owe her shit. You know what I'm saying? If anything, you owe me, you and God. Y'all both owe me, because I'm really pissed off right now at y'all, and I'm not making no amends. Even though it's don't say people, still, I have the submissiveness to have to be okay with God. And my attitude, I felt like God owed me. Who the fuck do he think he is? You owe me. Do you not know how I was raised up? I was abused as a child. I wasn't given that silver spoon in my mouth. I don't feel like I owed you or the mother relationship. She should have been here. Where was she at? So as this attitude, now I'm thinking that I'm this innate person. I bring you in my house. I feed you food. You don't even have to do shit when you come to my house. So why are we having a meeting? What the fuck is the problem? You know, so... So my husband did his little prayer, and he looks at me and he said, do you have anything you want to say? I said, no, I don't have shit to say. You know, I just don't have nothing to say. I have a real bad attitude by this. He looks at my mom and he says, Madeline, do you have anything you want to say? She said, yes, I have something I want to say. She said, I think you treat me like shit. My neck went all the way around. And over 30 years of hurt and pain came up. I still don't like to talk about it sometimes, because I didn't realize how much hatred I had for her and God. I said, what the fuck are you talking about? You was never there, and I'm inviting you into my home. You know what I'm saying? How dare you come into my place? Oh, man, I had so much shit to say to her. It was like, after my husband said, do you have anything you got to say? Well, when she opened her mouth, I said, I don't know who the fuck this bitch thinks she talking to. Make a long story short, I had done my men's list. And that night before, I went to a meeting and didn't feel like I owed God an amends. I thought it was just tradition that everybody put that shit on there. I do not like everybody. I'm going to keep it real. I don't fucking feel like that. And that night, that stuff happened. I had to work 11 to 7. I'll never forget it. And I got in my car. And my job is probably 5 minutes away. It felt like it was a whole hour that I had in the car with God. And God said to me, he said, your mother didn't want you. Well, wait a minute. Let me back up. When we had that meeting after I cussed my mom out, she said, I never wanted you. She said, the whole time I was pregnant with you, I stayed depressed in the projects, on the 9th floor, up in the projects. In fact, after she had me, the connection was never there because she let her girlfriends take care of me. She would put me in the dresser drawer, and when I would cry, she wouldn't even come get me. She told me this shit, you know, just sitting here. But when she was telling me this, there was an ease and a comfort that came over me. I can't even explain. I know somebody else would have probably snapped saying, bitch, what you mean you didn't want me? I didn't feel like that. It didn't even penetrate. What registered to me, like, this makes so much sense. You know, because the literature talks about in self-acceptance, that's the disconnection. You know, and that, I found out that was my disconnection. But anyway, while I got in the car with my mom, now that's what she said. God said, your mom didn't want you. Your dad didn't want you. He said, I wanted you. At that time, I knew. I got there, honey. I was eating carpet saying, God, please forgive me. I'm so sorry. You know, and I realized all the things that I had survived through, that there was purpose in my life. I'm not here by coincidence. It's not because my mother wanted me. It's not because my dad wanted me. It was because God wanted me. How much more gift can that ever be? It's not about the man that made my mom. It's the one who wanted me. He ordained and created me for such a time as this. And I was so overwhelmed. You know, I was so happy. I was thanking God. I was like, Lord, don't let me have to get to shouting up in here, you know. So I was like, oh, this is just an awesome thing. And ever since then, my recovery took off from there because no longer do I have to live in bondage, wondering why am I here? What am I created here to be? God, I don't understand. How could he live like that? And I didn't live like that. God said, because I wanted you all to myself. So I had to apologize. And I haven't been the same since. Me and my mother's relationship is awesome. She has 12 years clean. Man, I met my dad. It was like, how you doing? You know, fuck that. How you doing? You know what I'm saying? Because it's not because of you that I'm here. It's because God wanted me here and I was able to walk with some integrity. So it is what it is. So I just want to thank y'all for allowing me to be here. I didn't know what I was going to share. I really, really didn't. And I didn't know where God was taking me to. But I do want to let the newcomer know, welcome, if you're a hot fucking mess. Also to the newcomer, to the old timers, because sometimes we think and we get embarrassed and we feel real humiliated and not want to come in and get honest. Because of the embarrassment and that false ego and that false pride. For the newcomer, it's okay that you clean and crazy. Just don't stay clean and crazy. Do the work. And the last thing I want to talk about is that the step work is not man-made. You know, some people get on the step work and I'm done. Some people get on the step work and you ever meet sponsors who sponsor people and they put them on a step work, and you doing this shit. You know what I'm saying? You doing it. You work up until step 5, and I'm talking about my own experience. I worked up to step 6, and my sponsor smoked, and I had 10 years clean. And the sponsor that I had took me back. And what don't make no sense to me, and this is just me, Why would you take somebody back just so that you can get to know them when it wasn't you that orchestrated the process? Because of a sponsor, if you have another sponsor, they should be able to know exactly where you're at on that step work. It is totally selfish, self-centered to take somebody back just so that you can get to know who they are when it wasn't you who brought them where they're at. So I don't do that to my sponsees.
Thank
God. And I'm going to keep coming back because Sharon is sharing the time. I appreciate y'all listening to me.
Let's give Lori another hand. Donnie, my name is Sandra and I'm an addict. And at this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker, and that will be William.
It don't work. I'm an addict named William. Here through God's grace and God's mercy. And I'm going to thank him that just for the day, I don't have a desire to use anybody or anything. And I think that that was a wonderful way to start a meeting. Man, I am so honored to be here with my sister here. You know what I mean? I'm so honored to have you here. You know, see, I was thinking, and I don't know where... what I'm supposed to do, what I know that I'm supposed to do, all that I know about the position that I'm in right now, that I know that I'm not supposed to talk about who I was so much as who I am. What I think that I'm supposed to talk about, I was reading and in the process of the self-discovery process, what I found is that when you arrive to your ninth step, it talks about all throughout and in our flat book about how all the necessary preparation it took to get to this moment. See, so I understand that maybe there's probably somebody in the room that just kind of came in the room to hang out with us because you love us, but what we're supposed to do is make this attractive for you. See, so I'm here, man, because look, I'm not just gonna do what you want me to do. I didn't come here to waste a whole lot of time talking about, you know, how bad it has been. Because if I'm still stuck in how bad it has been, then that means that I'm still stuck. That means I'm not improving my condition. So I came here, man, to share, man, about some gratitude. I'm so grateful. I'm having a wonderful day. I want to thank the Chesapeake and Potomac Regional Convention Program and Committee for thinking enough about me to ring the phone that day. Because I don't expect that I'm supposed to be here. There's a problem when you start to believe that you some kind of way are supposed to be here every time the show goes on. Sometimes you're not supposed to be in the show. Sometimes you're supposed to be a spectator. So look, I got some friends here, and I'm kind of I was sitting here, I was listening to Laura, and I was like, you know, I'm in such a good space, you know what I mean? So what I want to do is I want to start off, I want to talk a little bit about the one of the exciting things, and Bob talked about it in the history. He talked about how in the beginning that the traditions were the thing that connected us. They still are the thing that connected us, but what the thing about it is that steps are so personal. And because they're so personal, it's really kind of hard to check other people on where they're at in their step process. But the one thing you can do that interconnects us is about the traditions. And so what I like about the traditions, now I'm a member of the Battlefield area, Narcotics Anonymous. I have a home group there. I'm the area vice chair for the area. You know what I mean? I've been committed to performing various forms of service throughout my Narcotics Anonymous life. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful for that. You know what I mean? I've had an opportunity to be part of areas who are in their infant stage. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful for that. So I hung around and I know what it feels like to be a part of something, you know what I mean, and to have a whole lot of really lofty goals and want to make a whole lot of other stuff happen. But I'm grateful because the ninth tradition starts to talk about the importance of the ninth tradition is that, like, after we get here and after we get here and we work, that we got to remember that our primary purpose always continues to be to simplify our message in such a way that the newcomer, any addict that shows up in a room, can get what they need in the meeting, and that we should not ever get so consumed with trying to be so lofty to try to come up with all these great ideas that we forget our primary purpose. So what it is, it says, and just because we talk about that we should never be organized, it says that the ninth tradition is not an excuse for disorganized service work. Great example of that is something about how we'll do is we'll get the report on the home group level and the group conscious, and they'll say that some service position will become open, and what we'll do is we'll forget that we have other pieces of literature we call the concepts. We'll forget that for real, that we should not set somebody up to fail by placing somebody in a position just because we don't want to have the position open, so we'll put a newcomer in a position that we know they don't have the integrity to maintain, and then wonder why they fail. There's something wrong with putting new babies and set them up to fail. Look, you ain't got no job. You ain't never been good with paying bills. You want to be the treasurer? No. No, we do that. We get so consumed with not having a position open that we'll put somebody in a position not understanding, and then we'll act like we don't understand why they fell short of the lofty goal we set for them, because we put them in a position that we knew they didn't have the integrity to maintain. So the purpose of our service structure and the problem that we still have in the here and now with a fellowship as old as it is that we still lose the ability and the importance in communicating with the structures that we set up to serve us in the first place. We come up with boards and stuff who have directions and stuff that we don't even know what their direction is, because what happens is that boards start to form lives of their own, and because we lose communicate with them and we lose the ability to make sure that they're still serving us, and what happens is they become their own entity, and then they start making excuses and have a problem, and we want to check what it is that they're doing. Now, you don't have to really know about that. Look, if you're just an addict as such that's just hanging out in your home group and really not trying to be all involved, you're just trying to get a day clean, and the only thing you want to do is, like, you know, sweep up some floors and hug people at the door. Look, you're a primary reason why this program works. You're a great example of our 11th tradition. You're a prime example of what recovery has to offer, but there's a lot of other stuff that goes on in this fellowship, and if we don't start to invest in what's going on outside of here, what happens is that them same substructures and committees that we developed to serve us can destroy us. Because what happens is the stuff that they do, we become accountable for what they do, even when we don't know what they're doing. Now, I don't want to beat no particular structure up. In fact, I was real convicted on that. I'm not here to beat anything up or anybody up or any service structure up, but suffice to say that if you hang around here long enough, you'll see a whole lot of what I'm talking about going on around you. The benefit of staying just a little bit longer than a couple cups of coffee that some people identify themselves with, and I really don't really get that. You know, I've been here a few days, so you got here Thursday? No, I'm just trying to understand. Did you just get here? You don't know, shut the fuck up. This is what I'm saying. So I've been here through a couple of cups of coffee. So you don't really drink coffee? You drink tea. I mean, help us. So look, so it's talking about, no, that's important. That's important stuff. Because what it says, man, is that we, you know, when we start to run around and do a whole lot of other things outside of what goes on in Narcotics Anonymous, where there's some kind of way down low inside of our gut says that something about us don't think that this program works all by itself. We start buying into that the thing that worked here that got countless other addicts before us clean is the same thing that'll keep us clean. We start buying into that like we can get all we need, all our little addictive needs met right here. When we start running outside of here, man, it kind of says Narcotics Anonymous just might not work. Yeah. I don't know how you stay here that long. I got to go to other places. So it starts to deal with and starts to delve into some real important spiritual principles. Look, what I find is that, like, if you want to go in a relationship meeting, and in fact, if the convention was to have a relationship meeting, then what should happen is that the people that come up here and share about relationships, that if they're not talking about traditions, they're talking about unhealthy relationships. And when they start sharing about traditions, then I find that in sharing about the traditions, they start sharing about health relationships, because the little generic stuff they used to share with us in the beginning was that the steps was to help us keep us from killing ourselves, and the traditions was to help us from killing each other. It's about us being able to connect with each other. Thank you, Lex. And so I'm here, man, and I'm grateful for the way that autonomy pervades throughout all of our traditions. I'm grateful that mindless that nameless thing that goes on, that thing that makes us all accountable and bound with the same, you know, humility, and that prudence comes up, and that we need to be mindful of what we do and how we do it, and that we need to be able to check each other, because you know I still have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor, so therefore my information should be checked by something, somebody, some structure, so like I'm not just out here on my own anymore. It's important when people start to share. Richie said it earlier, man, an addict with bad information is dangerous. An addict who simply just wants to serve because they feel like absolutely that it places them above everybody else, man, there's something about the importance. Understand that when you get here, that the same principles apply, that like we got to stop being greater than and less than each other, that we got to develop an equalness with each other, and we got to start first buying into the one program. It's something about the oneness. You know what I mean? It's something about how when we serve, when we are considering the needs of everybody, as opposed to serving, considering only our personal needs. Now, she shared about the ninth step, and I'll touch on that, but what happens is the reason why the steps came first before they started to get into the traditions, because it was an understanding even then that if you don't start delving into who you are and start understanding what you are, then there's a chance that your one vote that you made in your group conscience is going to be a self-centered vote that's not going to be concerned about the God conscious. Thank God for the if that they talked about in the very beginning, where they said that if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make that effort. Thank God that when they said that it works when you work it, that they talking about you and that you'll work and that you'll get better if you work it. Thank God that the addicts came in here and that, look, in the beginning, if he said it was four addicts that sat in an empty room waiting for us to get here. And then they came back and they sat in that same empty room for us to get here. And then we forget that, and then we want to claim that people are just trying to be famous when they come and share. And why are you getting a sharing shirt, William? No, I buy a sharing shirt. Nah, because I'm gonna keep sharing. I want to share the same shit all the time. A newcomer only believe in what he can see. That's art literature. It talks about, man, we come in here only believing in what we see, and we are seeing, believing kind of addicts. And so therefore, if you dress up and you came to this convention and you put your best outfit on, the addict who just came out the swap meet, who can't get dressed up like you are, maybe think that maybe this program works if they can get an outfit like you got. And so maybe next year if they got two outfits, then they're going to be the addict that proves and demonstrates visually that the program works. Stop being pissed at addicts, man, because they don't believe in what they can't see. Thank God, man, that the totalness of our program leaves room for addicts to believe in what they can see. And thank God that all throughout our literature, it talks about that it's about our walk. So addicts is watching us. They want to be us, they think. You know, if you really knew what we had to go through to be us. I really want them shoes. No, you don't. No, you don't. He got this cute little saying, he said, we can just throw our problems in the middle of the floor. We'll be elbowing each other in the temple trying to get our problems back. Because nobody wants your shit. And so here we are, man. We're here, man. And so I'm grateful for the structure. I'm grateful that the willingness that it takes. You know what I mean? That this convention committee gets in place, you know, months before the convention takes place, so that next year's committee gets a chance to sit down with this year's committee and participate and seeing how it works, so that they have a practical experience. Because sometimes what you got to do is you got to take a new baby and you got to put something together so that they can see it works. Because if they don't see it works, they won't believe it works. So that next year we'll have another successful convention. And if you're blessed enough to be here, then you already know that we got to win already. We already in the winner's circle for next year. Already make your plans, lock your room down this year for next year if you don't know that. Because it's going to be good, because next year's committee is already here doing work now. How I know that? Because I served like that. Can't talk about something you never did. So here we are. So let me jump back into like this other pace, this personal discovery, this thing that convicts me in the here and now, the thing that makes me okay about who I am right now, man, is that I came in here and so like here and now stuff. You know what I mean? I don't want to waste a lot of energy talking about. Let me just share this: that our steps are designed in groups of three, and that the groups of three are contain the same principles that they talk about are the paramount principles throughout our fellowship. They say that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the basis. You know what I mean? That we're able to have and sustain long-term growth and discovery. And so what I found is that like every time, look, and we're talking about the first, second, and third step. We're not going to waste a lot of time, and we'll just say that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, and that every honesty step that I've encountered means that there's something that you got to do for you that nobody else can do for you. And that every open-minded step, hence the second step, the step that was designed to create a dependency on each other, says that every open-minded step is something that needs somebody else to help give you direction, because without them, you won't have an example in order to do what you need to do. And then there's the willingness test. And the willingness test, man, by the time we've arrived to the ninth step, we've already been introduced to this loving and caring God in the third step. In fact, we've at that point developed our first initial real relationship with him. And so we understand now, those of us that have been here for a minute, you know what I mean? And if you don't have a sponsor, call your sponsor, check this one out. You know what I mean? You know, just in case you think we just got all spiritual and that's the religious meeting, and half the meeting want to run out because she said God too many times. And you know what I mean? So count the 96 times that I found it in the basic text in the first 10 chapters before you start beating her up for talking about God. Look, don't start. So the willingness steps are the God steps. The willingness steps are the steps that God starts to show off in such a way that after you go through asking everybody else to help get you through whatever it is that you're going through, and after nobody else can help you, and then he finally steps in out of nowhere, so you think, does for you what you couldn't do for yourself, then he gets the credit for it. And the reason he needs credit then, after you've asked everybody else for help, is because he needs the credit to know that nobody else can help you, so you can't give credit to nobody else for what he's just done for you. First three steps. Now we move on, so we got the next three, and we take the same honesty and the self-discovery piece that we need, and the fourth step, nobody can do for it but you, so you need the level of honesty. I know there's other principles, embodied, encouraged, and things that are necessary in the fourth step, but if you don't get honest in the fourth step, you're going to tell somebody else's story. We still in here, man, look, in the need to feel like we accept it, we'll lie, we'll tell other folks' story because they sound better. Our story changes based on what's popular in the fellowship. Fifth step, talk about if you follow direction, by the time you reach the fifth step, then you already understand, you know what I mean, that by the time you went to God and by the time you stripped butt naked in the mirror and started to accept who you are, that by the time you get to the sponsor, that if your sponsor don't cry the way you think that he or she should cry, you should be already all right because you've already presented it to God and you've already gotten okay with it with you. And that's about following direction, but it needs somebody else's stuff because that step don't work without first getting the honesty that you need to hear or the open-mindedness from somebody else saying, I've been there too, baby boy. Been there, done that. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You get to another end and another phase, and you get to open the willingness piece all over again, and you're asking God, and God said, you don't believe me? That's why everybody in here knows if you're on the sixth step, because we already know you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs because you're trying to fix you. Yes. You're on the sixth step, ain't you? A sixth step is not a step you can hide out and act like you ain't on. No, when you start living a sixth step, everybody know. The problem is that because when we got to the first three steps and it says that we got to turn the thing we turn over in the third step is our belief system, our fractured belief system we got introduced to in the second step. We turn over to God in our third step. We get introduced to ourselves in the fourth step. We talk to you and understand that we're not unique in the fifth step. And then in the sixth step, God gives us our will back. And then he gives us our will back with us trying to fix all the shit we just found out in the last few steps. That's why we crazy as hell in the sixth step. I've been hiding out all this time. I've been having all this shit in the storage room that I ain't been willing to identify and address. And so there's other stuff in there. There's stuff that needs to come up early. There's the fact that I'm writing and I got a resentment with my father for my first four steps. She just talked about that, about when you come in here and you go through the step process and you still got this thing eating you up on the inside, but you got clean time and you got a successful life and you sponsoring folks and you got the greatest home group in the area, but there's some shit still tearing you up on the inside. That's why we keep writing steps even after we think we've completed them, because there's some shit that got to go a little bit deeper. Four times I wrote negative stuff about my father. Four times I was pissed off because he didn't show up at the basketball games. And he never told me he loved me. And he did. I can't believe he left my mother when he did. And you should have stopped that bitch from breaking the window when she threw the brick through the window because you left her and came home only to leave and go back with her the next day. You should have been there to protect me when my uncle was molesting me. Where was you, Dad? Four times through the four-step process. Four times getting honest about it and still not getting okay with it. Four times trying to make him understand me instead of understanding him. So we there. So we move into the next phase of our recovery process and more honesty, because after you try to fix you in six and you realize that you can't get it, the reason there's so much relief in seven because we finally just got honest with the fact I can't fix me. You can have it. I quit. Take it. Fix it. Arrest it. Put it away somewhere. Any goddamn thing. I can't do this no more. So then he arrests the behavior. You come in this fellowship a hole, you get to the sixth and seventh step, you think that he just like relieved you of ever being a hoe again. No, he arrested that hoe, and that hoe will be the thing that jump out the bushes on you with 16 years clean when you think you recovered your ass off, you got a few more sponsees in a new car, you just bought the house, and then that lust will jump out the bushes on your ass. It's me. I just got parole, nigga. I'm back. No, because that's what happens, man, because we forget the amount of humility it took the first time we asked God to remove something in his shortcoming to start giving us relief from a thing. There was such a certain level of desperation that existed when we start to go to God and ask him to do for us what we can't do for ourselves, and then he does a thing for us, and then we forget that he does a thing for us, and then we fall in the same line that they explain in recurring relapse where it says that we forget the amount of effort it took to achieve a certain level of freedom, and so what happens is that he'll jump back out on us, and now before we know what's happening, we've already used clean. This fellowship ain't about just because you ain't getting high on the dope that sent you here mean that you don't use. Do you think that you got to lose your clean date for your disease to be active? An active disease. A disease that ain't outside doing push-ups, but in fact is sitting in your seat. Not the seat next to you. Stop looking around and take the fucking mirror out. No, your seat. Come on, man. I'm just sharing my experience. They asked me to share. I didn't call him. I can't say, can I come share, please? I really want to share, please. No, they called me. I was minding my business. So So I'm there. So I'm getting there. So then I'm doing that. And I become open-minded and through guidance and stuff. And I start to list stuff. And I had IRS on there. I want to be able to share some great nice step stuff about how I'm paying IRS. No, they call me. They say, if you don't give us what we want, we taking every fucking thing. Yeah, I'm paying, you know, $300,000 a month. The IRS, and you know what I mean? I'm making this financial amends, you know what I mean? And it's all wonderful. No, I'm just paying them $300 because I don't want them to take the other eight. No, for real. Every week. Pay us, or we taking it? But what I don't want to talk about. So let's get to. I like that. Where that? Put that shit up in the air. When I say two, you say pot. Two! I mean, he started playing music. I'm sorry. They like, come on, man, get serious and shit. I'm sorry, don't leave. So look, no, for real. So I don't want to. So I get there and I'm through, and I go through the step process over and over again, and I start to make the surface amends that are necessary, this type of stuff that everybody else needs to see. Because what happens is that usually when we first start to process ourselves through the step process, through the guidance of our sponsor and through the network of people that we surround ourselves with, is that what happens is that we start to be able to address the surface amends that allows everybody else to know for absolute sure that the program works. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you have to be a living 11 tradition for the people that are sitting next to you. You have to be the one that goes through the thing so somebody else says that when my turn comes to go through the thing that I can make it through that thing too. And so you get your stuff. You know what I mean? And you keep working through it. And God, only God knows what's inside of you that needs to be addressed that he has to work on in private in you. And so you don't know that you have the thing in private in you. The same thing you desperately asked him to deal with the first time through the process now is four and five and six times, and you a 12-step having sharing all over the country ass kind of guy, and all of a sudden some shit gets paroled on you and shit ain't going your way, so you think. And so what happens is now you gotta go on your world tour sharing about how you fucked up. But when does the tour end? And when do you start sharing about getting better? This is the share about getting better thing. And so it talks about all throughout in our flat book, it talks about that sometimes when you start to address an amends, that sometimes you need to stall out an amends. Because amends is not healthy when you try to make face-to-face amends with somebody who really ain't trying to hear shit from you. No, let's make it real personal. Because if you're the first one on your amends list, because you've acknowledged that the person that caused you the most harm was you in the fourth step, then sometimes you understand that the only way you're going to be able to change your behavior is to first forgive yourself for your behavior. So the first person that you need to make an amends to is you. And ain't it a bitch trying to amend some stuff to you and you ain't ready to hear it yet? That don't even have to be too deep. Think about that one. Sometimes you ain't ready to amend you. Sometimes you're not ready to change your own behavior. And what happens is that the reaction that happens from the behavior that you're still unwilling to address in the here and now, some shit that came up from the way back when, still has the ability to totally destroy your life right now. As a consequence, it becomes life changing stuff. And then what happens is you start to then become a living example that their program works again, because now everybody's watching you. How are you going to get through this one? Mm-hmm. So then you forget, because you've read the literature, you forget that the reason you in pain is because what it described and more be revealed, it says that we grow through pain and recovery and often find that such a crisis is a gift. And that anybody that hasn't experienced crisis yet is probably not in the recovery process yet. Because we grow in here through pain. We don't grow in here avoiding pain. It's nothing more beautiful than when your turn comes. It's nothing in here more beautiful, man, than when everybody starts talking about you. They ain't talking about you because the disease isn't threatened by you yet. The disease is only threatened by people who are working steps. No, for real, we don't have a disease that's a respecter. When you tell it, if you don't leave me alone, disease, I'm going to work a step. It's too late. Yeah. He got you already. No, it's okay. That's why they say call first. When everything is going well. That's why we work. That's when nothing is going on. Because it's a hell of a thing, man. We know how to come out of a hole. It's something about us, man. We come out of a hole looking like superstars. But we won't use the same skills to stay out the hole. So it ain't about that I'm here now. And so like for months now, I've simply had to talk about the harm that I caused, because you can cause harm clean. And like, I don't want to understand, and all I wanted to is address the harm that I caused somebody else. And then I don't want to address that I tried over and over and over to make the amends. And then I started to read, and what the literature says that, look, if you try to make an amends to somebody and they're hell bent on maintaining the resentment against you, then call your amends made and move the fuck on. So while I'm free, it's because I ain't running around here chasing somebody who ain't ready to accept my amends. You ain't even got to understand that. The reason I'm smiling today, man, is because I'm free today. That's what the amends process is all about. It says, and look, and the freedom came, and in the painful attempt to make an amends, because what happens is that for most of us, when we try to make amends that means something that our heart felt, that sometimes the response we get to the attempt to make the amends is not that beautiful stuff where they just accept who we are and the condition, and it's okay, we'll let it pass. Sometimes it gets ugly, and the biggest fear that we have is that we don't want to try to make an amends that somebody won't accept. But if you make the amends, what it does is it demonstrates the level of humility that it takes, because it demonstrates that you believe enough in God to know that if he presents an opportunity for you to make the amends, regardless of how they receive it, that you got the humility and the growth from that, you believed in him and you made the amends. So the new stuff we got to talk about now, we're supposed to talk about the joy and the successes we go through, going through what we're going through. It's nothing like watching somebody go through something and watch them step out of it clean. You want to be somebody's hero? Go through hell and come out of it clean. We know how it feels. Look, my friend Jeff is in a meeting from Fredericksburg. Jeff said, look, William, if you look at the workshops, you'll notice there are no drama topics. That means something. Sometimes we make drama topics because they're popular, because sometimes our spirit is so warped that we want to hang around with people who are a little more fucked up than us so we can rationalize the bullshit that we're in. So we are talking about recovery, and the underlying theme here is that if we just make it and keep stepping one foot in front of the other, that we can get through anything we go through. That meeting should be the room nobody else can fit in. Thank you. Nobody. Oh my God, they're talking about steps in the other room. I'm going to share on sharing, clean, and living dirty next door. I think about just starting a new meeting. In 5 minutes, we're going next door and share on sharing, clean, and living dirty. They ain't going to even know that we share. And a whole different group of people are going to show up in a meeting that ain't really about the steps and shit, because they'll rather hear us talk about drama than come in here and talk about steps. I bet we can fill the room up next door if we give a juicy enough drama topic and shit. And it won't be none of these people, because this is steppers right here. We'll just fill the room up next door with some bullshit. Fuck it, I'll just play a old tape. So look, so listen, man, so here's the thing. Here's what I want to close with, man. It really was a great example, man. I start to read more, and I start to believe more, and start to enjoy my surroundings more. And so I was looking I was looking at this show, and he was talking about the animals and stuff, and he was talking about the jungle. Now, I'm one of them people, you know what I mean, I like to see everything. I have this innate ear to be able to connect what we do here with the stuff that goes on even outside here. And they started talking about these two animals, and the first animal that they talked about, you know what I mean, in the beautiful jungle, and the jungle is a beautiful place. We know about the jungle. The beautiful thing about being in this fellowship is that this fellowship is not designed as a zoo to create you to be used to being captive. This is like a wildlife reserve that's designed to teach you how to live outside of here, so that when you leave here, you've already developed the skills to live out in the jungle you came from, productive to that society. But it wasn't about that. It was this other story about it, and they talked about it. They said on the same morning, on any given day in the jungle, there's two beasts that have to make a decision, and one group is the gazelle. Now, one thing me and Lester always talk about is about the importance of being pack animals. Gazelles are pack animals, but they all have the same thought every morning, and their thought is that no matter what I do, I can't be the slowest running gazelle. Because if I'm the slowest running gazelle, I'm going to get my ass ate up. There's another animal in the same jungle. They're pack animals too. They hunt in packs. They do all that kind of stuff. They have the same thought. And their thought is this. And it's the lion. And the lion is sitting there thinking, all I got to be able to do is run faster than the slowest running motherfucking gazelle. And I'm going to eat. Now here it is. We're in Narcotics Anonymous. The way that we stay safe is we stay packed up. The problem is that there's no clean time requirement for the slow running addict. You have a disease out there that every morning wakes up with one absolute desire. To tear your ass up and to be faster than the one that's the slowest running in the room. If you have no desire to do the things that it takes for us to stay here, there's a chance you're going to be the one that gets your ass tore. I know you got clean time and you got steps that don't protect you from the disease. You're not exempt. So what we do is we don't just stay in our own lane around here, we stay in a pack. We roll together. We the step members. We the ones that believe that if we work this program, we got a shot. Your responsibility is to leave this room and let the next person know who was waiting for the drama topic. And if you work a fucking step, you got a chance. And if you don't work a step, you won't get your ass tore. I'm Hag named Wham. Thank you, let me share.